Okay. Damien, usually it's just you and I.
It is, but we've actually got a guest here today,
yeah,
Jim.
For a change, I've invited my friend Jess. So, Jess, this is Damien.
Hi, Damien. Damien.
Hi, Jess. How are you going?
Good, thank you. Nice to meet you.
Likewise.
Peace.
Jess wrote an amazing piece this morning. I subscribed to her newsletter around bravery, and I invited her in to have a conversation about bravery today with you and I. Now, you and I have spoken about this a number of times, but before we get into it, how have you been?
I've been well, Jim, and I went to the footy last night. I got home a little bit late, so I'm a little bit rusty this morning.
All right. Okay.
How are you?
We'll get into the rustiness. I'm okay. I spent this week traveling interstate. I spent a couple of days in Sydney, and the weather was beautiful, mid-20s, you know, it was
nice.
Lovely. Yeah. Got ready for a run in the morning and realized I packed everything bar my running shorts. So,
oh, bugger.
Yeah. Just amateur move, you know.
Did you interrupt
my training rhythm, so.
Did you get the jeans on and just go old school?
No, I didn't. But I did read, Jess, I'm interested in how you are, but I did read in your plot in your newsletter today that you didn't brave the weather this morning.
Oh, no.
I did it and it was freezing.
Yeah. I'm usually pretty game. Like I'll go when it's quite bad. Because if you don't do it when you say you're going to do it,
yeah,
you know, you lose that. So, but it was too bad. It was blowing a gale in Ballarat and it was just belting with rain. Like you'd be foolish. It would be foolish move.
So how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm slightly warm because I've just run here from the train station. But that's good because it is absolutely freezing in Ballarat today. And I've been cold all day. So I'm feeling more alive now.
So tell me, Ballarat is in regional Victoria.
Yes.
So a lot of people listen from overseas, interstate, so regional. How far out of Melbourne?
Probably about 100 km.
100 km northwest.
Yeah.
Northwest.
Northwest.
North northwest.
Very soggy wheat bits. Yeah. Yep.
Northwest.
But it's only like an hour on the train. So it's,
so
distance is quite far, but you feel as soon as you're on the train, we're just as close as Elwood, you know, like it.
It's quite accessible, isn't it? Because
you can sit
there on the train and do some work and bits and pieces.
I read. I've just been spending the last hour reading.
What are you reading?
Oh, it's Amy Poehler's autobiography.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is just hysterical. So, it's called Yes, Please, and it's just a funny reading.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yes.
Jess, your husband and you run Hux, a prefab building company. Tell me about that.
Oh, gosh, where do we begin?
Hux, what is it?
So, we have developed a prefab building system, which has taken us about 8 years to create. And we're just now sort of in the startup phase where we're trying to get out and get in front of people. And it's basically what we've done, or what Matt's done, has developed software that takes 3D architectural drawings and turns those into two-dimensional cutting files that we can then turn into SIPs, which are structural insulated panels. And I guess the benefit of our system is we only make the panels we need, so there's no waste.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of different from other prefab building or other SIPs use. And SIPs usually like one size and then you just kind of cut them down, whereas we just make the ones we need and all the offcuts become structural membrane, structural part of the panels. They can become ribs and battens and all sorts of things.
So no waste.
That's what we're going for. Zero waste.
Wow.
Like at the moment, we probably have one skip a month from the factory.
Sure.
But the main thing is on the building site, you won't have any waste.
Wow.
So what we're doing is we're making we call it the Hux prefab system because it's a system. It's not just the panels. So we do the windows as well, which are double glazed. And we've bought that manufacturing in-house.
Shit.
Yeah. 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 Just another little factory in Wendouree.
Wow.
And as it sort of develops and as the sort of technology develops, we kind of bring more things into the system. Because when you've got a building that's essentially airtight, you don't want to have shitty single glazed windows in it.
No.
Like it's going to, you know, that's going to diminish the whole thing. So it's just sort of building upon it.
Yeah, awesome. Can I just ask, just a bit of context, right? Mm. Why do we need sustainable, affordable housing?
Oh my God. Like, because the housing market's just completely rooted.
Mm.
Like, you know, like at the, like I think it was last week or the week before the government just released, like they want 1 million houses or whatever, some outrageous number, 1 million new houses in the next 10 years or something. I'm completely wrong on those stats.
Mm.
But there's something astronomical. Like the suburbs are growing so quickly and people need houses at such high demands. These suburbs are just oozing out of the centres, you know, like catching the train here from Ballarat. In the last 8 years, we've got two new train stations. like Cobble Bank and Rock Bank, which are just these sprawling suburbs of houses that just look like they're whacked up in a day. There's just polystyrene billowing everywhere. You know, like it's just a depressing sea of black of just these houses that they're built to just be new on the first day and then fall apart as soon as someone's in. So
yeah, wow.
It's never been more important, let alone trades, like getting hold of trades to build houses at the moment is extremely difficult. Like there's just the whole system has been, because it hasn't changed at all, it needs a huge sort of, like a flip on what's happening. And if you look overseas, prefab's normal. Off-site construction is like something like 74% of houses in Scotland are now prefab.
Well, that modular construction and stuff like that. And where did this idea for you to first originate? Like how did it come up for you?
Yeah, so Matt worked with his dad for a company that did fire inspections on buildings. So they did all the like the water testing for the fire hydrants and pipes and hoses, whatever. Anyway, so he was on lots of building sites and just saw the amount of rubbish and just was like coming home and going like, why is there so much rubbish everywhere? And being just a curious guy, was really into like European styles of buildings and like Germany and Scandinavia and all their amazing architecture, and prefab's really big over there. So we just sort of figured out, why can't we do it?
Why can't we do it?
That is the best question of the world. Why can't we do it?
Yeah. So we kind of decided, it's almost, so our 10-year wedding anniversary is this year, and that was the last time we had a holiday. So when we got back from that holiday, we sort of decided, right, this is it. This is what we're going to do. Don't know what it looks like, but let's just, you know, we're packing our cute little rental in North Melbourne, and then we'll go live in a factory in Williamstown. And then we outgrew that, and then we've moved up to Ballarat about 8 years ago because we just needed space to do what we want to do.
What's it like working with your husband?
Oh, best and worst. You know, like it's fabulous because you get to share, like, you know, like work's such a big, important part of your life, so that when you get to share that together, that's really awesome. But then you also share everything together, and that sucks because, you know, you're one person who you'd usually turn to decompress with is actually the person who's part of the problem, in the best possible way.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, right.
I think like, we all can.
Yeah. You're living in it together, so it can be a little bit harder to lean into each other. But there's, I wouldn't do it any other way, and I don't know any other way. Like we've been doing this for 10 years now, so it's just... What do you mean you don't work with your husband?
Yeah, I get that. Of course. I met in a cafe. I mentioned this like 100 times on this podcast, but anyway. Used to finish CrossFit at 7 o'clock and there's this guy, dapper, big smile, handsome, you know.
Stop it.
Standing next to me, pretty much at the same time, standing next to me.
Yeah.
And I'm in my like sweaty gym gear. He's like already dressed at 7 a.m., like ready to go, ready to rock, you know. And we just hit it off really. And I remember, Damien, fourth or fifth time we caught up, you posed these two questions to me. We had very philosophical conversations right off the bat, and we still do. This was about almost 10 years ago when you and Matt were married, which is why we couldn't come to the wedding, by the way.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
So we caught up and we had these very philosophical conversations, and Damien put two questions to me. Who are you? And what is the work you're here to do? Do you remember?
Mate, I do remember that vaguely, and it's quite possible that I ask you those questions. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because they've stuck with me, right? They're really important. They're really wonderful questions.
Like, what did you answer?
I keep reflecting on those two questions. So I think the thing that really, I think that lights me up about you, Jess, and what you do is that second question. You're here to do a specific job, and it's not that I don't think it's the software you're building, you know. I think it's bigger than that. I feel that it's bigger than that. Do you sometimes meet people where you feel, Damien, where you feel like, yeah, they're doing something day to day, but they're here to impact us in such a greater way? And that's how I feel about you, Jess. I think your impact is so much greater than the thing you're doing today. The thing you're doing today is the journey towards that. Of course it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Gosh, you're gonna make me blush, Jim. What a lovely thing to say.
I'm just really interested in, I feel like you, and I've only met Matt briefly, the fact that you're so into this and you've taken it so far already and you're on the precipice of something remarkable, that takes a special kind of person.
Mm.
It takes a resilient person, because you're going to fall down a lot of times, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
You're going to hit a lot of dead end.
Yes.
It takes a very brave person. Damien, you work with a lot of leaders and you tackle those things, don't you? You see that all the time. Resilience, the need for resilience, the need for courage, the need for bravery.
Yeah, it's a really great conversation, Jim. And, you know, Jess, I barely know you, but since you've walked into this room, you've got this energy and light about you. And you get that from people that are really, really deeply connected to what they do. And when you think about like marketing, brand, sales, it's about one thing, your integrity, how you show the world your integrity, what actually matters.
Yep.
I kind of think everything outside of that is kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, let's call it out, whether it's content, marketing, brand strategy, whatever you want to call that. It's about showing the world what's deep in your heart, what's going to fuel you and energize you. And I'm just getting that from you. Is that something you can talk about or where you've sort of, how you came to that journey?
Do you even think about this stuff?
All the time.
We've just hit you really hard.
just go straight to the deep.
We just get right into it.
I reckon what it all sort of stemmed from was last summer I read Reasons Not to Worry by Bridget Delaney, which is a book on stoicism basically. And it's just, but it's like a modern day version of it and gives you sort of modern day examples. And it just sort of really highlighted some things that are really important, that I needed to be really important in the journey that we're on. So because we've been doing this for so long, like 8 years is, nearly 10 years is ridiculous. That's like, you know, the whole child's life. I kind of dawned on me that I've got to change the attitude because for a while there, we were working towards success. We wanted success to happen and then we'd keep charging, like, let's do it. It's going to be there and we're not quite there. And then I kind of realized that, you know, like 5 years had passed and we were always striving and kind of it just took a couple of moments and a couple of just realizations and that book in particular to realize like, this is it, you know, like if we're just on the precipice of either extreme success or extreme failure in terms of the amount we've put in, but it's kind of irrelevant. It's because each day is the only day you've got and that's very stoic, right? It's a very stoic idea. So if you truly believe that and you actually lean into it, then I think my energy comes from the fact that I genuinely am fucking wrecked to be here. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing that it's been extremely hard to get where we are today. I've spoken to you about this before, Jim, like that idea of being fearless when you have nothing to lose. The smallest thing is just amazing.
It really is.
You know, and
fantastic.
And that sort of perspective, I just really ingrained it in us. Like it's been sort of there the whole time, but I just sort of solidified it that last summer. And then all of a sudden, like things have never been worse, but we've never been better. Do you know what I mean? Like we've kind of managed to really flip, a perspective on it. And even though we're still striving towards something, it doesn't matter, you know, because we've got today. And that's
wow. That really resonates with me. And whether it's extreme success or extreme failure, like, it might even be extreme, same.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And just more of the same.
Yeah.
It's being grateful that you're here is actually more important than that. You know,
yeah.
I get very tired of talk of growth and scale. I get very tired very quickly when I hear those words.
Well, they don't mean anything.
No, they don't.
You know, anyone can say them.
I think, it's that sort of narrative, you know, the old Silicon Valley scale at all costs. I just think it's just insane. Like, why do people get so obsessed with that? It's just more bullshit, to be honest.
Absolutely. You know, you hear a lot of people talk about building thriving cultures where people feel like they belong so the organization can scale.
What the fuck does that mean?
I think, like, at what cost, you know?
Yeah. Do people actually enjoy, like, is it genuine though?
Well, you're right, Jim, and I think it's an important conversation in the context of where you're at, Jess, and I kind of love this, you know, this sort of stoic notion. You know, we occasionally work with some high-performance coaches and Olympic athletes and these types of people, and the people that play the game at the best level cannot get to where they are without being present in the process. As soon as they think about a medal, an outcome or a cup, they'll cook themselves. The anxiety will come up. And it's not that they won't, and it's not that we all don't get caught up in that sort of anxiety attachment, outcome, P&Ls, balance sheet. Of course, we live in the world, but talk to us more about sort of embracing the day, the moment, we're here for a short time and that kind of celebration. Because I think that's such a fantastic philosophy that actually builds high performance, innovation and culture. Is that, Can you elaborate a little bit more about how that plays out or when that sort of goes even sideways sometimes when you get caught in attachment.
Yeah. Well, I guess like another sort of stoic idea is the idea of character. You know, that's all you've got. So, and that works really well into that too. So if you've only got today, you've only got this particular moment and all you've got is your character. Like, I can't control how you guys respond. I can't control if you guys had a good day on the way here and you're going to be, you know, like have something else on your mind. Like, you can control nothing other than how you are and how I respond to people. And when you sort of bring it back to that, it's really easy to make really simple and nice decisions. And even in like really horrible moments, I don't know, like when the kids are being ridiculous, you know, like say I've got a 6 and a 7-year-old, right? So they're awesome. But when, you know, they can be belligerent when it comes to an idea that they want to get through. And instead of like being cross and, you know, like my natural instinct is to go like, oh God, like stop being such a jerk, or an egg, as we say in our house, like stop being an egg, stop being an egg. And how do they want to be heard right now? And it's like, actually, you know what? You just want my attention. All right, let's stop. Calm down. I've got all the time in the world. If this is the last day on earth I have, then, oh my God, come here, tell me about it. And if you can have just an ounce of that in all those interactions throughout all the relationships, then all of a sudden, everything is really special. And it's almost like, it sounds ridiculous, but it's almost like you're on like some kind of high the whole time. Because if you genuinely went out for a dinner with a friend and you're like, imagine if this was the last time I went out for dinner with you. Like, what would you do? You would just be like, gosh, so much love would be in that meal.
Presence.
And you would tell your friend that you love them, that you just, they mean so much to you. And if it's not the last time you ever see them, awesome. You just had a great night.
Or you get to repeat the whole thing.
You get to repeat the whole night, right?
That's really wonderful.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
And I believe that. Like, I believe that so thoroughly now. That is very rarely a situation, even like a really shitty one where I can go, even if it's fucked and I'm like, God, I've done something really wrong, or I, you know, I can still, it still helps to go, but how, like, stop. If this is it, what do I want to end this on? You know, like,
it's such a powerful way to live life, I think. I mean, I'm actually reflecting on myself right now going, do I really do that all the time? No, I don't. And why not? There's really no reason why any of us can't be living that philosophy, because that's just pure presence. That's love. That's energy. That's power, as opposed to autopilot, coasting. Oh my God, is it Friday yet? We can all get caught up in that. But sometimes you just got to say, mate, that's insane. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Why aren't we living like that? And what's stopping us from making those calls?
Yeah. And I think as well, like the fact that, like, it has been so tough for the last couple of years. We've lived off nothing. You know, we've had zero in the bank account many a time. So that you, like, that's all you have. There is no coasting. Like, coasting isn't an option. Like, it's really, I don't know, like, it just gives you that perspective that, like, it doesn't matter if we, like, it just, there's nothing there. This is it. This is all we got. So it's very real. You don't even have to perhaps fake it or imagine that this is it. Like, it is it.
Yes.
You know?
Wow.
Which has been a great motivator. And I hope that regardless of what our future looks like, I can just maintain that. Like, I just want to always feel like this, because it's great. It's really good.
Presence. I thought that too. I was reflecting on the same thing. Am I as present as I think I am? Yeah, I'm not sure. I certainly strive to be. I think I mentioned this just earlier, that I did brave the very cold Melbourne morning this morning. 6 o'clock, and it was blowing and it was cold, but I did go out. I did a long run, but just before I did it and after I did it, I just stood there, you know, just looked at the Yarra and just took it in.
Yeah.
Really. I took a short video and sent it to my friend in Greece, and just to compare. So there are times when I take the time, but I hear you, Damien. We've got to reflect on the fact and actually call ourselves out.
Well, Jim, here's some feedback straight back to you, if I may give you some feedback. It's incredibly rare that you're not present or you're not mindful. So ever since I've known you, you're like one of the few people that you really are here. And that's not knocking people that aren't here, because I reckon I'm definitely one of those that comes in and out. But I think that sort of mindfulness that you have is, it kind of really defines your character. Because when you are mindful and when you are engaged and when you are present, you're not just saying to yourself that you matter. You're saying to everyone around you, you actually matter as well.
I'd agree to that.
Thank you.
You actually matter. And that's kind of your own philosophy. I think it comes through who you're being, not what you're saying.
I guess so.
You can't talk about mindfulness, can you?
No.
A lot of people do though, and they don't live it, I guess. Yes.
It's hard to authentically have it, like through and through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do you journal? Do you do solitude? Do you do any of that?
I do my, so I write a diary every day and I have done since I was 11.
Right.
Which is like one of my, yeah, every day.
Hold on. You've been writing a diary.
Yes.
Every day.
Yes.
Since you were 11. Jeez.
Like the first one is my favorite one because it was like, it was the best day ever because I did a flip on the trampoline.
Cool.
Like I just love to go back to that first day.
That's great.
And I can't wait till the kids are at the same age that they start, because then I can, like, you know, using that idea of empathy and, like, you know, really imagining what it's like to be a 15-year-old girl again. I'll be able to go back and go blow by blow, yeah, being what was a 15-year-old girl like? It was shit. I remember, like,
and you have all these diaries at home,
yes,
in a box somewhere,
yes,
boxes
and a suitcase, vintage suitcase. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a gift.
So I have done that, and my mum did it. And my sister did it. We've all written diaries. And then about actually 193 weeks ago, because I did my blog 193 today.
Yeah.
I decided to start writing a blog because I can't write. Like, I know that sounds silly for somebody who says that they can't.
Yeah, I get it.
But I wrote my diary every night. But like professionally, I really found it difficult to articulate myself in words. I'm a graphic designer. Like, I can show you cool shit.
Yes.
No worries. But actually writing about it and objectively as well, I found really difficult. Mm. So I gave myself the task of every Friday writing 500 to 800 words. And it was meant to be like cute design stuff that I was learning, you know, things I found. And it ended up just going, it started in COVID and it just sort of, it ended up being these like winding tales of this is fucked and what about this? And oh my God. And they ended up being rants. But the more ranty they got, the more response I got. And all the ones where I tried to be clever and like, is it a typeface or a font? Like, it would just, like, you could hear a pin drop. Nothing happened.
That's what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I've been doing the same thing.
Yeah,
and I started pretty much for the same reason, just to find my voice, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's a great way of journaling, great way of finding, actually just trying to discover who you are.
Well, it makes,
when you do it in a public
Well, it makes, I don't know, like it helps you sort of make sense of things.
Mm.
Like I kind of, I guess I've never really thought about it like that, but I do. I spend 2 hours every Friday morning and I kind of write about something.
Mm.
So that means I have to process it again. And sometimes even just doing that and even writing it the way I want to remember it helps in the sort of like acknowledging what's happening.
Fascinating.
What happened.
You journal, don't you, Damien? You do it a lot.
Yeah, I love journaling. I've probably given it a break for about 12 weeks, similar to you, not since the age of 11, but I reckon, you know, probably 2-3 decades I've been at it off and on. But I kind of, there's a term that comes up straight away when you talk about that. It's like the work. I don't want to call it the work, but the work of, you know, just finding out who you are, what matters most, moving through your own conflict. And when you don't do that work, other people cop it.
Mm.
You know, so you know what I mean? Like if you haven't sort of sorted out what's going on in your own brain, your spirit, your soul, your mind, and so you'll take that conflict into the world.
Yeah.
And that's, I know we spoke about it, I think in an earlier podcast, Jim, around solitude, but you got to do the work.
Yeah.
And the work is sit. Oh, I don't want to sit.
Yeah.
Think. Oh, I don't want to think. Get off the frigging iPhone and stop bloody scrolling on stupid shit.
Yeah.
You know, stop, read, breathe, write. And it's not easy, but that's I think it's one of the best things people can do.
Oh, God, yeah. I can't imagine, like, I hate it. Every week I get really anxious about it and I don't like doing it because I still don't consider myself a very good writer.
Yes.
But I couldn't not do it.
Like, yeah, wow.
You know, it's become such a habit now that I have to do it.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
It's like Tuesday, the deadline.
Yeah.
And I've commitment. Because you know, it's a commitment to myself and just to show up for yourself, just for yourself, just to think about the thing, just to just to sit and think exactly what you said.
Yeah. And you're so good at it, Jim. You've got such a discipline. I mean, how long has your blog been going on for now?
Almost 9 years. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Just consistent all
every
the
Tuesday,
time.
Yeah. Yeah. I've taken breaks, like I'll stop for 2 weeks over Christmas or that sort of thing because, you know, no one checks their email after Christmas. But yeah, nine years every Tuesday.
And what have you noticed, like in terms of how your voice has changed?
That's a good question.
Yeah, what have you noticed over that period?
That's a good question because people assume you just knock it out like a robot and you talk about the same shit for 9 years. Well, you don't. The way my voice has changed, my writing's gotten better.
Yes.
That's for sure. My writing is also less precious, so I don't worry too much about grammatical errors. I just write what I need to write. I read it once, correct what I need to correct, and I just send it. I don't labor over it. As far as my voice, yeah, I found that I really gravitate towards specific things outside of the work that I do, and I find that it's important for me to bring them in. I read a lot about the civil rights movement, a lot of, about social justice, a lot about philosophy, and I try to bring those in and make sense of the work that I do or the shit that occurs in the world of work that I do, right? And that for me has just kind of a way of unfolding, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, over the course of writing. I've also learned that it doesn't matter who leaves, who opts out. That's actually good. That's a filter.
Yes.
It actually, what matters to me are the people who say, who I've met. I've met so many people around the world who I write to and write back. That has actually been one of the really, I call it the highlight of my career. It's been the absolute highlight of my career, the connections I've made. Mm. You not only discover yourself, but I think if you do it well and you do it right, you start discovering the good people around you and also the good trouble you're willing to get into, which is really important. Yeah. Senator John Lewis, it was one of the civil rights activists in the USA, used to call this good trouble and necessary trouble. We have to get into it to change systems, and but you need good people around you. And those two things are really good to find in our careers and our lives even.
I love the word good trouble, that sort of good provocation, you know, good disruption, not just that fancy, you know, disruptive thinking. Like if someone says that, I'm going to lose my shit. but like that true sort of, because it matters to you, it matters inside. You're doing it because you give a shit. That's what I notice. Like, and that's kind of, I think that's the essence, isn't it? Like you actually care.
You can't fake that.
No.
You can't fake that side of it.
That's why I like the idea of good trouble. It takes courage and bravery to say, I need to change that system over there, and I need to do it with compassion, with love, with empathy, with the willingness to sit and listen and hear things that are really uncomfortable for me to hear. Mm. That's good trouble. And you end up changing it, that thing.
Yeah.
But you change it in a way that is non-violent, but still very powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, Gene. That's
a good reminder. Thank you.
I'm going to create some trouble.
Yeah.
Definitely my next blog. You've got it on me.
No, there's a great book written by John Lewis. He passed away a couple of years ago. He's a US senator, and he marched with Martin Luther King in the 60s. He's an absolute legend, right? Across the Bridge, that's what it's called. But yes, Jess, I'm interested though in, Damien and I have often spoken about resilience, fear, adversity. We've often talked about, because we've faced it, right? We're both children of migrants. We've faced adversity. Our parents migrated here 60 odd years ago or so. We grew up in a very divisive and racist era in the 70s and 80s. So, and then we also run our own businesses. So then, you know, running your own business, you require, like you said, you look at zero often. Mm. Right. And you sometimes live in zero. Sometimes you live below zero.
Yeah. Right?
And we often talk about that. So I'm interested in what do you do to lift yourself out of zero? And I'm not talking about go from zero to 100. Mm. I'm talking about go from zero to like 0.5.
Yeah.
Just to acknowledge, all right, we're in the shit.
Yeah.
You know, I've been there, you've been there, so has Damien. Like, how do you get from zero just to one?
A little bit better?
Just a little bit better. So you can then face tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right, wake up tomorrow and just hopefully maintain that, not necessarily go a little bit, just fucking maintain that. I'm interested in the people around you and how you show up to that.
I've got a few things in place now. Like during COVID, I had a really shit time because we had young kids and work just fell around us, like everything kind of collapsed. So I saw a therapist for a while there, and basically what was happening was I had no me time. I was never looking after myself at all. I started running, as we were talking about. Yeah, so I wasn't a runner at all. And until the age of like 35, I said I couldn't run.
Yes.
And then I just started running. So I do that every second day, and I do yoga every other day. I go for a couple of walks around Lake Wendouree, which is a good 6Ks every couple of days a week. Nice. Those, no matter how busy we get, doing those are really important. Like I look at them as medicine If I don't, that's why today was like the first day I haven't run all year.
Yeah.
It's because the weather was so shit I couldn't, but I would have because it's that important. I now understand that it's that important that I do these things because it's the whole oxygen mask, right? Like putting mine on before I can then look after the kids. So I very much look at those things. And I've done a few things as well, like getting better at switching off. Like again, saying before, like not waiting till things get better. So you have to learn to handle them now. So it doesn't matter what's going on, what happened that day. I'll come home from work at like 5:36. I take my watch off so nothing's beeping at me. I take my phone away and I don't have watches on the weekend. Like I just turn everything off. Like after work is home time. Weekend is home time. And like very rarely will anything disrupt that.
Right.
And I try and stay away from screens. I like started to learn the bass because I was like I wanted to not watch shit.
How good is that?
I did some work for a client, a friend of mine who was in a band and didn't have any cash to pay me. So they were like, well, we can give you some bass lessons if you want. I was like, yeah, sweet. Okay. Who doesn't want to learn how to play the bass? So now, and my friend gave me a bass. So now I sit there every night and like,
how good is that?
Play Bohemian Rhapsody and the Ghostbusters theme track.
That's awesome. My son's learning the electric guitar.
Oh, really?
So our house is full of Nirvana.
Fantastic.
Nirvana is great. Mm. Yeah.
Ari's learning electric guitar at the
moment. Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so
maybe
we've got to
jam and do you got to come over and jam. Yeah.
Wow.
But little things like that are just, that just helps level everything out, you know? And again, coming back to that, like if this is it, like what am I worried about?
Yeah.
You know, you don't worry twice about things. If something really bad is going to happen, you just wait to the day it happens. You don't, you don't stress about it now. And actually, believing that. And then you can kind of do those things just completely separated.
Yeah.
When I'm playing bass, I'm like just being a doofus and being a real amateur at something that I suck at. And that's so joyful. I love it so much.
I get that.
I just wrote down this term. You just said, if this is it, then that's okay.
Yeah.
Jeez, how liberating.
I love that.
If this is it, then that's okay.
That's awesome. Like imagine if you can go through life like that.
Yeah.
I am. Like, seriously, like I am.
Credit to you.
Good on you.
I think so. I think that's really remarkable. I love that too. If this is it.
If this is it, that's okay. But Jim, you know, maybe you and I have had experiences in our community sometimes when there is a lot of passion and drama. And look, I guess I'm speaking for myself a little bit, but I'm often around people who are so passionate and fiery, but sometimes there's just such... No, it's not okay. This is how it's going to play out. You know, and I'm not saying specific to one community, but often you can grow up around people that there is like it's all on the line.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, of course. The Mediterranean hot blood. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I get that. But that centeredness, that ability to be centered in when you're at zero is really powerful.
Think about like Mother Teresa and stories like that, like people who literally had nothing and still just gave so much. Like, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but at the same time, like that, you don't need to have anything to give something.
Yeah.
Like you really don't.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's just like little, tiny little things that can, like even like letting someone in front of you in traffic, you know, just like, you know, you can, get in there, you know, like that there
you're
is
in
enough.
A hurry.
Yeah. that there's enough to, you know, smiling at somebody when you walk past them in the street. People think I'm a lunatic when I come down from Ballarat because I'm like, you know, like Ballarat's still got a good country vibe, right? So people are like, how's it going? You know, nods and winks down the street. And you do that in Melbourne and people are just like, this girl's crazy. This so this country bumpkin just like coming down.
How do you do it, Damien?
Jim, the way I do it and something, Jess, you just said something before on the sort of resilience piece, which is what you're just about to ask me. One of the exercises we give people, and I say to him, dude, if you're going to lose your shit in traffic, there is no way you can deal with high pressure or tension in a major scenario.
Yeah, right.
So if someone's flipping you the bird, smile and wave. You know what I mean?
But
you don't understand. So, dude, well, I do understand. So this is where you start to build resilience.
Yeah.
So if you can't handle an overreaction to a barista who's forgot your order and taken 25 minutes or someone that's cut in front of you, well, you're really setting yourself up to fail when pressure really comes on. And that's actually resilience. It's also as simple as how you are in life, how you are in traffic, how you are when someone's pissing you off and all you want to do is react, but you think, well, actually, that doesn't help me, nor does it help them. So why do I need to do that?
And you just have no idea where that person's come from. Do you know what I mean? You've had no idea what their day was like. Like they could have just got some really terrible news, or there was an emergency at home and they're rushing home, or, you know, so when, like you've got a choice to just sort of diffuse and go, all right.
How important is your circle?
Yeah, pretty important.
Just that your intimate circle.
Oh, well, it's getting bigger. I'm fine. I'm just let people in.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm turning 41 in a couple of weeks and I'm having a big party.
Oh, nice.
Because fucking why not? I'm 41. What an inconsequential birthday.
Yeah.
And I just said to Matt, we're in a rental at the moment and they're selling it. They put a big for sale sign up yesterday. And it was just like, oh, you're fucking kidding. But the place has got a great backyard. So that this could be the last party we could have at this house. So let's have a big one. We were talking about like inviting our like friends, which is a group of about, 30 or 40 people. Mm. And then I was like, you know what? I want to invite all my friends.
Oh, cool.
And it's like the lady I met on the bus who I now have lunch with every six.
Yeah, how good's that?
Yeah, like a couple of clients who I've just become really good friends with, and just inviting everybody because.
So special.
Yeah, like why not? Why not be excited about stuff like that, you know?
I can't even remember my 41st birthday. You'll remember it.
Oh, yeah. And we're all so lame. It's like 2 to 5, so people don't have, they can have lunch and dinner at home.
Yeah, great. But I love the unconventional nature of just your philosophy. I love that. Like, I'm not going to have a 40th. I'm going to have a 41st. Why not?
Yeah.
Who does that?
Who does that? Who does that?
That's fantastic.
You guys should come. It's going to be awesome.
When is it? A couple of weeks.
I was born on the 29th, so it would have sucked growing up in Australia because grand final would have been, every birthday would have been a grand final weekend.
Yeah. How do you pull yourself up out of zero?
It's probably a lifelong question, Jim. but I think about like, Jess, you create boundaries and you have that sort of solitude or switch off time or time with family. I think it comes back to your philosophy. And if it's sacred to you, then you'll make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
If it's sacred to have quiet time and it's your, like a good mate of ours often says, nature is my church. And I can really resonate with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a walk or movement is my life, which means my whole body comes alive when I'm moving and hiking and sweating or boxing or doing anything. So they become almost a part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't sort of fake that. And it actually has to matter. And for me, it's always been around what actually matters to me, not to anyone else. Mm. What actually matters to me? What matters to me is that, health and conditioning and strength is got to be number one, because what matters to me is that I have my own quiet time. What matters to me is that I'm creative. What matters to me is that I've got some spiritual connection. Or what matters to me is that those people around me, that I've got really strong, deep connections with people in my circle. And then once you get that philosophy, I don't know about you, but I think you can only get there when you haven't made the right choices beforehand. I mean, that's just been my personal experience. You don't get to those places until you've come through the mud or the fire.
Mm.
Or, I remember sitting in a corporate role and I had an amazing lecturer. It was part of our master's work. Called my bullshit out. She said, everyone has to get up and tell their story. And I told the most ridiculously bullshitty story straight out of, that Christian Bale character in American Psycho? The sort of the cufflings, the investment banker and all that kind of stuff. And she goes, that's a lot of shit. She goes, it's not your story. I go, what do you mean it's not my story? I think I've said this before, Jim.
Yeah.
But I think when people are willing to challenge you bravely on, mate, what are you doing? That's not you. You're not happy about that. What actually matters to you? And I had an amazing mentor to answer your question once, Jim, who said, mate, when are you going to start doing what God put you on this planet to do and stop bullshitting?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like a grenade went off in my head. And I thought, whoa,
I better
answer this question, because that thing around pulling yourself out, Jim, and building resilience. And it's, I don't know, I just think it's about, what's your philosophy? What is your view of the world? Mm-hmm. What matters most to you? And that's, when people go, who are you? Well, who you are is what matters most. It's when you come alive, and only you know that.
Do you think most people struggle to find that? Because that really resonates with me, and I completely agree that that's so important to me personally, and it's a framework, almost a scaffolding that actually lifts you out of really dark, difficult times. But do you think most people struggle to actually just have that as a foundation, that idea of what do I think about these things? I don't have connection with my inner circle. I don't have that. And all the other things that you mentioned, you know, I don't have a strong values base. Do you think most people are actually struggling to find that or even looking for that?
I think that's a good question. And I think the answer to that is when they don't look for that, they really struggle and they get sick and they get anxious and they get depressed and they do stupid shit or we drink too much or we get addicted to things or we buy stupid shit or we work way too hard because there's a disconnection inside. And you spoke about good trouble before, Jim. This is good trouble and it's uncomfortable and it was uncomfortable for me. And we've got to be asking those people that we love these uncomfortable questions. If we see they're not happy and really say, mate, what's important to you? What do you actually want to do?
Mm.
Like what actually matters to you? Because I want you to be alive. I want you to be engaged. And I want you to be engaged for your kids. And sorry
to interrupt. It's usually there's some challenge. There's some adversity. There's something that has to happen that changes people.
Mm.
You know, like some people just coast through and they've never had to have that epiphany, that like moment where they think, oh, fuck, this is it.
Yeah.
You know, like without that, you needed some kind of catalyst. I don't think it happens naturally. I don't think you can just go from, you know, high school to, you know, job to this, to that, and then have that naturally. I think things need to go wrong.
And what I mentioned at the beginning of this is that's what really inspires me about you is that because the reason I agree first is that you're not going to find that from an external source.
No.
There's no, you can read all manner of books, et cetera. They might spark ideas, but you've got to do the work.
Mm, yeah, no one can do it. No one else can do it.
That's right. You can go and do a number of courses. You can do a whole bunch of other shit. Mm. But you've got to then come back and do the work. That's what really inspires me about you is that you have been through some tough times, as you mentioned, through COVID, et cetera, and the fucking rental and all that. And I feel like what I mentioned earlier, like you have this capability to really step into tomorrow like it's a new day. Actually, I'll rephrase that. Not like it's a brand new day. It's a day tainted with the shit that happened yesterday, right? And you accept that, right? And I think that's really powerful.
Well, you're stronger for it.
Absolutely.
Like that's what resilience is, right?
I agree. Yeah. And I actually think that's a key ingredient to actually be successful and however you define success, right?
Yeah.
Actually, that's a really key fundamental ingredient that on the majority is missing.
Yeah. I'm going to butcher the saying, but there's a saying, something like, you know, the obstacles aren't on the path. They are the path.
Yes.
You know, like they're not in the way stopping you from getting there. They're getting you there, you know.
That's the shift, isn't it? Yeah. That's a mindset shift you've got to have.
They are the way. You need to fuck up. And almost like every time when something goes wrong with us or like we're just like at the end, we always just say, what's it going to be? What's the silver lining on this? Because this is fucked. So the payoff is going to be awesome.
What's like, the lesson
know,
here?
Yeah, what's the lesson, lesson, you know? Here? So it's almost like the more dire things get, the more we're like, wow, what's going to happen? the outcome of this is going to be great.
Wow, that's amazing. How's Matt doing through everything?
Oh, yeah, he's all right.
Yeah, I can imagine.
He just knows. I think it's the self, like I've got the self-doubt and it's almost like in myself and not in him. He's just so adamant that this is going to work. Like it's impressive. I admire it so much and I feel like I wouldn't have followed him into the fire if he didn't have this belief. But we have these moments when things are so stressed and then something clicks and we take another big step forward and he just looks and he goes, I told you, babe. I told you it's going to happen. And I'm like, blah, blah, you know, like
it's that's
just,
amazing. That's
great. Like it's just... And I just had to trust him with my whole heart and everything and just be there as this is going through because all I can do is just support him wholeheartedly and, you know, and if it doesn't, if this is it, it's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Because the other choice for all of us is to not pursue it. And there's nothing wrong with that either, is there?
No.
But is that what you're about?
God, no. We look at each other now and it's like, would you do it any other way? And it's like, no. God.
I think that really resonates because if it's not working, you drop it and you keep moving.
Yeah.
You have to. Otherwise, it becomes this dead weight.
And then again, if this is it, then why are you doing it? We really need to, at least especially the last couple of months, we've needed to believe in it because that's all we've got at the moment. It's just that belief that this is so needed.
Yeah.
And That's what we're riding on. That's what's getting us through, you know.
I was just going to say one thing that comes to mind, you know, we're talking about like what it means to have like a lot of drive and personal integrity in what you do. And that may not necessarily mean that you need to run a business, but I think for a lot of people that are listening, I mean, maybe the provocation, the challenge is how are you going to find the juice in what you do, mm-hmm. whether it's a career? And if you don't have the juice, and I don't want to be sort of overly naive and understand people have bills and mortgages to pay, but surely there's going to be more than that for them around, you know, not being in a job where they can't find the juice or they're not connected or they don't have something for themselves within that role. I mean, you can't be doing that your whole life. I mean, I don't know. I mean, is that, or am I just being overly ambitious?
Or idealistic.
Or idealistic. maybe we are, but that's okay. That's what we're here to do, to provoke.
Yeah. I've got a lot of my very dear friends who I just truly love, but they haven't gone through that adversity. They've never looked at their bank account and thought, fuck, we can't pay rent. Yeah. You know, they've never had that. So they don't have the fire in their belly that you need to really put yourself out there. It's that fearlessness again. There needs to be like nothing to lose to be able to put yourself out and connect with some people because you have to.
I think you've got it in spades. And geez, Huck sounds like a remarkable idea that's impactful and meaningful. And that really inspires me.
Thank you. Yeah. There is. If we can do what we want to do. We could like fundamentally change housing for people, you know, like we could be building, this whole system is set up that it's in order, like it's a software, right? We could do one house 25 times and that's more efficient than doing 25 different houses. So we want to do scale. We want to do big projects. We want to do social housing. And we may not have built one full house yet, but that's where we're aiming. Yeah. And if you just aim like that from day one, then it's almost irrelevant. And with Matt's belligerent, like, we're going to do it, babe. Don't even worry about it. Like, oh, sweet.
Jess, can I ask you a question? You know, Jim and I have sort of played around with a lot of entrepreneurs and startups, and there's a sort of theme that we often come across in a pitch deck or a pitch night or a Presno. It's this term that often you might hear, I'll believe you when you believe you. And so I get when we talk to you right now, there's this beautiful conviction and belief. And it's such a fantastic thing to maybe remind people or to inspire or challenge people, because when you go into the guts of why you're doing something and why it actually matters to you, then everything else will just come from that place.
I agree with you. Sorry to cut you off.
No, please.
Because there are so many people out there who don't believe in what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They think they do, but all they're doing, they're just regurgitating the right words. They're using all the right terminology.
The polish.
Mm-hmm. They all sound very polished. They're like the search keywords, the absolute right search keywords.
Yeah, that's
the SEO. The SEO is right. Yeah. You know, presentation SEO is correct.
Yeah.
They're regurgitating a couple of bestsellers that they read on the topic, and they're using some terminology. They're often called excellent sheep. Never going to fail an exam, but they haven't learned how to think for themselves.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
You're right, Jim. And not to sort of give you an answer to the question that I've actually asked you, but I think what I've noticed.
Go ahead.
But I'll pretend to be in your brain. Okay.
Go for it.
My gut feel with you, because you've done the work and you've found out what matters, then that's what comes out of you. So if you're not willing to ask that question, then you're not going to get to that place. Does that make sense? You've actually done a lot of. Seems like you've done a lot of self-introspection to be able to get to this place in time.
Yes.
You don't just get there. You don't just like arrive.
No. And the way we got there adds to it. Again, the obstacles become the path. Like if we hadn't have put every single cent of our lives into this business up until this point and lived in shitty rentals and done all that, then we wouldn't have the empathy and the drive now to do that for that market. Like it would be really easy, for example, to go into the passive home market. And that would be quite an easy line for us. But we don't want to. We want to make this, we've made the affordability has been a real key to the product because I want to be able to afford it. I want my family to be able to afford this house.
Yeah.
And that has driven that because of that pass.
That's amazing.
Fantastic.
That's really amazing.
Fantastic.
Jess, it's been wonderful to chat to you. There's a Greek word, philotimo, which is difficult to translate, but it means to turn up with an open heart, an open home, lots of food, but also lots of love. And you show up in that way. And it's really powerful. It's really lovely. It's been wonderful to connect with you. And I just knew off the bat, because I've known Damien for a long time, I hardly told him anything about you. I knew off the bat that you guys would get along really well. So it's been lovely to have you here, really.
Aww. It's been great, Jess. You just bring that beautiful spirit and fire into the story. And I think that's the juice, that's the fuel that we're always looking for. So thank you.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. And I've no doubt that Hux will take one step forward, and that's a meaningful step. I've no doubt about that. And that's what businesses like Hux do. They're the steps that really matter.
Yep. Yeah. No.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Damien Carolla, and I've been playing in the human development and high performance space for a few decades now and run a coaching practice called Mentor Hub. And I work with entrepreneurs, athletes, CEOs and leaders on the topics of change and transformation, leadership and culture. And what's central to my work is that we create safe, empowering and inspiring spaces for people to realise their potential. And I work with leaders and organisations across a diverse range of sectors, from building, construction and technology, through to retail and social enterprise. You know, lately I've been collaborating with leaders and teams around the topics of mental resilience and agility. You know, we use a lot of storytelling, open dialogue to help leaders and teams redefine what it means to build resilience and flexibility across a chaotic world. I believe in the power of the human condition and that each one of us is here to realise our full potential. And so Fearless Conversations is a series of dialogue sessions where we get to peel back the layers and really explore the things that matter most. It's a conversation between two good friends that care deeply about people and the worlds in which we live.
Hi, I'm Jim Antonopoulos. Actually, my name is Dimitri, but we'll get into that another time. I'm the Managing Director of Strategy and Transformation Consultancy, Tank. We're based in Melbourne, Australia. As one of Australia's earliest B Corp accredited businesses, we work across a number of impact areas on change and transformation programs, empowering young women, sustainable and affordable housing, financial literacy for underrepresented communities, accessible quality education, meaningful workplace cultures, and cultural diversity and inclusion being some of them. My team and I bring empathy and meaning to impact organisations, and we believe that every business and every leader can be good, ethical and purpose-driven, or at least they should be. Most importantly, I'm a father of three amazing people, and I work tirelessly to leave the world in a better place for them. Our podcast continues thanks to your support. Listeners like you who have shared our podcast with your networks on LinkedIn and other social platforms have meant the world to us. It has motivated us to continue doing what we do. If you would like to support this podcast and keep it free of advertising forever, please head on over to marchfirst.com.au/podcast, where you can donate to support our show and share the link with your friends and network.